back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Holly, let's go to the Ivy Organics 3-in-1 Plant Garden Hotline and bring in our guest for the week.
Luke Ruggenberg is a gardener, nurseryman, and a writer. He lives in the Pacific Northwest with his wife and two kids. Welcome to the program, Luke.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, you guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for joining us. You've got some knowledge that you're going to hopefully enlighten on Holly, myself, and all of our listeners that we always enjoy having guests do.
Oh, great. Yeah, we'll see what I can do.
So you say every gardener has a truck, and when I say truck, I put it in air quotes. What do you mean by that, and what is your truck or your first gardening truck that you had?
So this comes from my first book, 20 Reasons Not to Garden and Why I Ignore Them All. It's basically... most gardeners would love to have a legitimate, real pickup truck, and it's just not possible for most of us because the trucks are expensive, and we can't all have it. But we have to get things from the garden center home one way or another. So more often than not, we just kind of convert whatever we're pushing around or wheeling or driving into our truck of choice, and we shove everything in there as best we can, and we get it home. So my best truck I've ever had was probably my Honda Civic hatchback that I just put the seats down in the back and threw all my tools in when I was working as a gardener and tried to ignore the inch layer of water and mulch and everything that I had on the seats and on the ground. And, you know, it did the job.
And you're probably amazed of how much stuff that you could put in that car.
Oh, you can, as long as you're willing to.
That's the thing.
If you don't mind spilling stuff and getting things dirty, you can do just about anything.
Now, you say that gardening is the worst. Now, Luke, we have a garden show here. You're on it. We're trying to encourage people to garden, and you're telling people that gardening is the worst. What do you mean by this?
It's true that those words were spoken, but I should clarify and give the disclaimer that gardening is not the worst, and I don't actually believe that it is. But I use that as a way to kind of get a rise out of people and to kind of challenge them into thinking about what it is that we actually love about gardening and why it is we keep doing it. Despite all these, you know, dirty, hard work, bad weather, why we just keep at it all the time.
Well, I think, and you bring up the points there, it's not the worst, but it's for many of us, and some of us take it to the extreme, many of us, it's a hobby. It's our car collecting. It's our going to the bar. It's our golf game. This is what we do.
Exactly, yeah. And we wouldn't know life without it. That's just what it fills so many roles in our life, and so I think that's why we're able to overlook some of the more challenging aspects of gardening.
And with all the advances in technology that we have available, we do still have failures, and we and Holly and I are the same. We are certainly happy that there are grocery stores that can make up the difference of what we were not able to grow or failed at growing in our garden.
That's true. We do rely on those from time to time, yeah.
Now, what is the best advice you would say that you would give to a new gardener or maybe somebody who hasn't gardened yet?
Well, you know, honestly, there is a lot of advice out there for gardeners, and this is one thing I talk about, too, is that it's real easy for beginning gardeners to think that they're doing it wrong or to get overwhelmed or intimidated by all the professional advice out there, and it's really valuable to have that advice. I mean, we need to go to it when we don't know what to do, but when you become inundated with it, you kind of get paralyzed and you don't know what to do. So I think the best way people can learn to garden is to do it themselves and to get out there. Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to kill a few plants. Just make sure you're learning from your mistakes. And then my final advice is for anyone who hasn't to just grow some kind of food, and you'll be an instant convert. I usually recommend something simple for people who don't have a lot of space, something like a little blueberry bush or something, and once they have that first fruit that they grew themselves, they'll be a convert.
Well, and that's the other thing, that is, what is the saying in life? Sometimes it's better not to know the rules than to know the rules and break them or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, you're not supposed to be able to do that. Well, I did, and it worked, so I'm going to keep doing it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. That's it.
You say that people plant. You say people are just like plants are just like people. Forgive me there. How so? How are plants are like people?
Yeah, and this comes from my latest book, Plants Are Terrible People, which I understand is another controversial title. But gardeners know better than anyone the ways that plants are kind of like people, for better or worse. And I think the plants are terrible, wonderful people in a lot of the same ways that real people are. And they inspire and sustain us. They can let us down. They baffle and amuse us. You know, they grow and bloom and pass their seed. And, you know, they can die on us for any reason or no reason at all. And we get attached to our plants. And as much as we'd like to control them, they have lives of their own, and there's only so much we can do.
And we've heard stories that this, and had questions of, I've had this plant, it was my grandfather's, he passed away, how can I keep this? And it's like the heritage of part of that family's life that they're trying to live and keep alive to remember the past, that type
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly, yeah.
And then, Holly, you told the story that you have a plant that moves throughout the day at work, and people are a little freaked out about it sometimes.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, it's a thing.
Definitely. I would agree.
Yeah.
So your newest book is called Plants Are Terrible People. Can you tell us, I mean, you kind of talked about the inspiration behind it, that plants are like people. But what is your favorite part of the book or something you want to just elaborate on for our listeners?
Well, I wanted to just, when I said about writing gardening books, I really wanted to step outside of the kind of the real serious how-to advice thing, and I wanted to give gardeners a chance to kind of celebrate and commiserate all the hilarious, absurd things, experiences that we share in the garden, because there are a lot of them. So Plants Are Terrible People is a collection of these kind of absurdities, and some of them are hypothetical situations, some of them are short stories. There's a handful of recipes in there that I would encourage no one to attempt. There are plant zombies that make an appearance. There's giant rutabagas. It's got a little bit of everything. My favorite part, and probably most pertinent to your listeners for vegetable gardeners, is it's called Paralyzed. And it's all about the indecision that vegetable gardeners suffer when we're trying to choose our seeds for the year. And the battle that wages within us about, you know, we can't get them all. And so it just goes back and forth until we finally get the ones that we know are going to make the difference in our garden that year. But it's a process.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And, you know, the season's over here. There's some stores and online platforms that have seeds on sale. You have 35 different varieties of tomatoes, and you only have room for six. Some people have a very difficult time choosing. Other people are just grab random and boom, done. So, it can be a very difficult challenge. And some people, and Holly and I are victims of this, we overthink things. And sometimes if we keep things simple, at the end of August or September, we don't think about, boy, I wish I would have grown 90% of the time. I wish I would have got the orange tomato instead of this one,
that type
of thing.
That's really true. And the temptation is really bad when you work at a garden center and you sell 40 different varieties of tomatoes, which I do. And so you really got to pare it down from the start. And like you said, you're fine by the end of the season if you can keep it simple.
You work at a garden center, you got 40 varieties, and you probably get a discount on your purchase. So now you're thinking, where can I put all these at?
Yeah, it's kind of an ongoing thing at our work, that who's going to grow the most tomatoes every year. And I think that... my coworker grew upwards of 40 different varieties last year, so I don't know where she put them all, but yeah.
Well, you being an author, I'll address this question. When did you get that authorism bug? When did you find out in life that you were like, hey, I have a story, I want to tell this story, and where or how did that journey get to the point of actually putting a book together?
Well, it's been a long process. I started writing back in middle school and high school, and I've written short stories and started a dozen novels that I've abandoned. But it wasn't until I really got serious about my career in horticulture and I realized that there's so much material here to write about, and I didn't think that anybody was doing it in quite the same way that I was. And I started out by writing a blog. And then just decided the idea for 20 Reasons Not to Garden kind of popped into my head one day, and it was something I could run with. And then once I had that format, it was pretty easy to stick to for my next book, too. So I don't imagine slowing down anytime soon. There's lots more material to work with. So it's something that I love. I couldn't imagine stopping at this point.
Much like gardening, it's an addiction of sorts.
It is, really, yeah.
Well, Luke, tell us more about where we can find you, where can we get your books at, where can we follow your journey?
Oh, sure, and thank you so much. I appreciate that. It's I have a website that's lukeruggenberg.com. That's my name. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I have Facebook pages for both of my books. My current blog is called Fence Broke Promontory Gardens. The Kindle and print versions of both my books are available on Amazon. And then if you guys are ever in the Seattle area, I work at Ravenna Gardens, which is a wonderful independent garden center right in the city, and people come from all over the country and the world to visit there. And I'm the outdoor plant manager there, so stop by and check us out if you're ever around.
Well, always, no matter where you guys are listing from around the country, always support the Independent Garden Center, because if we don't do that, they don't exist, and we've lost a tremendous amount of knowledge and good plants that we can put in our gardens.
That's so true, yeah.
Well, Luke, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join us on the program and enlightening Holly, myself, and all of our listeners.
Well, Joey and Holly, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun.
You're very, very welcome.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.